The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it.
Good day, puny humans. Radical Russ Belville cannot be with you today. I am the Pinhead Pothead, here to bring you the Russ Belville Show tonight. On tonight's show, cops say legalize drugs with Larry Talley, retired from the U.S. Navy, now with Dallas-Fort Worth Normal. Also, in the Radical Rant, we will be talking about the need for more color in the marijuana reform movement, something I know nothing about. Also, we will be bringing you the latest news headlines, and of course, for our daily toker tunes, we will bring you the Halloween classic, the Monster Hash. Speaking of Monster Hash, Brian the Red is not here right now. We certainly wish he was. Thank you for joining us on our special Halloween episode. I am Pinhead Pothead. So glad to be with you today. We will also be going behind the headlines to take a look at the nefarious work of the medical marijuana industry, how they have once again defeated a chance at marijuana legalization for healthy people. This makes Pinhead Pothead very, very angry. Get ready. We'll be back in just a couple of moments with more of this pathetic Humans Russ Belville Show. I'm Pinhead Pothead. I am tired of raising hell. I would rather smoke a bowl.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect, and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Get Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. We are a full-service alternative health and wellness collective accommodating patients with natural, organic, holistic, and homeopathic remedies, nutritional guidance, advice, education, and medical cannabis, fully in accordance with Oregon OMMP law. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com or by telephone at 503-853-1319. Check out our menu on Weed Maps and visit Cannabis Outreach Collective today.
This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, October 31st, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Corporate interests in Maine torpedo 2014 legalization effort from the Weed Blog. Normal has worked with Representative Diane Russell in Maine to craft and prepare for introduction a measure that would have legalized and regulated the adult use of marijuana in the state. The proposed legislation would have legalized the possession of up to 2.5 ounces of marijuana and the cultivation of up to 6 plants by individuals over the age of 21. It would have established marijuana retail outlets and cultivation sites across the state to create an above-board regulated market to ensure that both those with experience and those with strong ties to the state of Maine were given priority. Applicants who are already operating in Maine's medical marijuana program and applicants with 2 or more years residency in the state were to receive the right of first refusal for retail licenses. To be introduced, the measure had to be approved by Maine's Legislative Council, and it was on track to do so until today. At the last minute, moneyed corporate interests representing established medical marijuana dispensaries came in and managed to flip one of the votes necessary to approve the bill for introduction. With pressure from those with vested interest in maintaining the status quo, this proposed legislation ended up falling one vote short of what was required for introduction. Court blocks ruling on New York stop and frisk policy from Yahoo News. A federal appeals court on Thursday blocked a judge's order requiring changes to the New York Police Department's stop and frisk program and removed the judge from the case. The judge had ruled in August the city violated the Constitution in the way it carried out its program of stopping and questioning people. The appeals court said the judge needed to be removed from the case because she ran afoul of the code of conduct for U.S. judges by compromising the necessity for a judge to avoid the appearance of partiality, in part because of a series of media interviews and public statements responding publicly to criticism of the court. The judge had ruled that police officers violated the civil rights of tens of thousands of people by wrongly targeting black and Hispanic men with its stop and frisk program. She appointed an outside monitor to oversee major changes, including reforms in policies, training and supervision, and she ordered a pilot program to test body-worn cameras in some precincts where most stops occur. Medical marijuana-using parents get baby back from USA Today. In a case that galvanized Michigan supporters of medical marijuana, custody of an infant seized by Child Protective Services workers last month was awarded to the child's parents Friday in a Lansing courtroom. On September 13th, Steve and Maria Green, each a state-approved marijuana user, stood in their Lansing home in shock as employees from the county's Children's Protective Services Unit said that the Greens might be exposing their infant daughter, Bree, to marijuana. As police looked on outside the Greens' two-story gray house, Bree was taken from her mother's arms and driven away. 4 attorneys volunteered their time, and leaders of the medical marijuana community declared the case would make or break future investigations involving medical marijuana by child protective units across the state. Sales of marijuana in the District of Columbia for medical use are off to a slow start. From Washington Post. Since the first legal purchase of medical marijuana in the district in late July, 59 patients, or fewer than one per day, have had their names added to the list of those legally registered to buy it, said Fasisa Waldu, Senior Deputy Director of the Health Regulation and Licensing Administration.
A father of a severely epileptic 4-year-old said his family would move to California next year if a refined version of cannabis that could limit his son's 10 to 15 daily seizures is not authorized for therapy in the district. Others said that post-traumatic stress disorders, digestive ailments, and migraine headaches should be added to the list. Some even argued that the list should be done away with entirely and symptoms left up to doctors to manage with marijuana as they see fit. New minister clarifies drug stance after cannabis comments resurface, from The Guardian. Norman Baker, the new drugs minister in the UK, has previously said cannabis is, quote, no more harmful than alcohol or tobacco, end quote, a sign that he could bring a more liberal approach to his role in the Home Office. He told BBC's Radio 4 World at One program he intended to concentrate on his policy briefs, which include drugs, alcohol, homelessness, antisocial behavior, online exploitation of children, and organized crime. Asked on Tuesday whether he still believed cannabis was no more harmful than alcohol or tobacco, Baker said in a statement, quote, I do not encourage anyone to take any harmful substances. Cannabis has become more potent over the years, and long-term use has been linked to increased risks of mental illness, end quote. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, Halloween Day, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at the history of the medical marijuana industry opposing legalization of marijuana for healthy people. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
Starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, firedublawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today. Let her bring in the beat. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
I like that.
That's right, baby. We're keeping the funk alive right here at Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, your groovy home of soul, funk, and disco. So join me, Big Daddy, every Thursday night, 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, at the Funky Roller Rink, where every night is Saturday night.
All right, welcome back, everyone. I wanted to go behind the headlines on that story we just reported coming out of the state of Maine, where in Portland, Maine, activists have been working for a long time, and a lot of people put a lot of effort into getting a legalization proposal for the city of Portland. Now, it would have been largely symbolic in that the state of Maine still would have had illegal cannabis. But Maine's pretty liberal when it comes to cannabis in the first place. It takes over, I think, 25 plants before it's even a felony in the state of Maine. And they're a decriminalization state. I believe you can have up to an ounce without it being a crime. And they also are a medical marijuana state with fairly good limits. So we were all excited about medical marijuana or marijuana legalization getting on the ballot for 2014 for the city of Portland to make legal 2.5 ounces of marijuana and to institute a regulatory framework. Whether it would have gone into effect, probably not, because it still would have been illegal under state law. But that does not change my intense disappointment with the results of today's lobbying by the medical marijuana dispensary industry in Maine. As reported by the Weed Blog, they were all set to go. This thing was expected. It had to go through a legislative council to approve whether it was, these councils, they have to determine if the language is proper and all the restrict, you know, everything's on the straight and narrow, you know, when they put these things on the ballot. So it was going to pass by one vote, and the medical marijuana lobby flipped one of the votes and made it so that people in Portland, Maine, who aren't medical marijuana users, are still considered to be carrying contraband when they have cannabis on them. And this just disappoints me because it's, once again, the only time I find organized, funded opposition to legalization by pot smokers. It's medical. And I keep telling this story year after year after year, every election cycle, at least I should say. This goes all the way back to 2008. I recall in 2008, we were running the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, or maybe it was 2006, one of those years. But we were running the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, and in that particular incarnation, it mentioned that the Cannabis Tax Act would supersede and replace all marijuana laws in the state of Oregon. And in doing so, it would have legalized unlimited personal possession, unlimited personal cultivation, a system of commercial cultivation and distribution, processing, and retail. And yet, it got a lot of opposition from people in medical marijuana because it would have gotten rid of the medical marijuana law. Now, think that through, right? It would have gotten rid of the medical marijuana law that restricts you to 24 plants and 24 ounces. And they were upset because then they would have been left with a law that lets everybody have unlimited cultivation, unlimited possession. And the reasoning was, if we went ahead and legalized for everyone an unlimited personal possession and cultivation, the feds would come in and they would strike it down. And then there'd be no law left. So we have to keep the medical marijuana law in place just in case they strike down the recreational law. And so that's why we got major opposition in Oregon. In 2010 in California, you had the Stoners Against Legalization campaigns. You had the Emerald Triangle voting against Prop 19. You had dispensaries taking the money that people were spending on marijuana. And when we're talking California, a lot of those people who are medical, okay, you're one of us, right? You're just a toker. Well, you know it and I know it. You went in, you got your $40 recommendation, you complained about insomnia, anxiety, or whatever else was on the board, and you got your permission slip to be able to smoke weed legally and shop in a dispensary. So you and I are the same. We're not talking about the cancer patient. We're not talking about even the person with regular severe pain. We're talking about the kids I see, you know, aged 18 to 24 at the Cypress Hill Show who are going to a Cypress Hill Show to get a medical checkup, because that's the first place you go if you want to see a doctor, and complaining about whatever so that they can get their recommendation so that they can go into the smoking areas of the rap show. Okay. So those people who shopped at dispensaries, their money was taken and then used to help defeat Prop 19. In 2012, in Washington State, just north of me, we had a major no on I-502 campaign. And to be fair, there was some validity to some of the stuff they were saying. The DUID law was bad and other considerations. But once again, the only organized, funded opposition of pot smokers against legalization, medical marijuana. And that's why I'm so excited about the 58% support we're seeing for legalization across the board, even in places like Texas, because maybe the next few states that start down this path don't have to go down that medical path. Maybe, just maybe, some state can come right out of the gates. Maybe it's Missouri. With just legalization, bypass medical, give equal rights to everyone. No more special rights for sick people. Let's just give as much right to the cannabis plant to everybody that deserves it. All uses none ya. I don't care if it's hemp. I don't care if it's medicine. I don't care if you have a good time with it. Whether or not you use it, how you use it doesn't make a difference. You have the right to use it.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reformer?
Brian Redman, how you doing, Brian?
I'm here. Oh, were we supposed to dress up today? Oh, I might have to do something about that.
It's Halloween. We'll be right back. We're going to take a break with some Silver Tip from Brightside PDX.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes. The best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, home of the famous lighter leash. Herb Age Designs. Get your Herb Age t-shirts and hoodies and show your pride. Herb Age Designs. We've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter. We'll see you at this year's Hemp Fest. Crank it up.
Legalize it. Don't criticize.
I'm just overjoyed. I've been cannabis activist for 40 years.
We're turning the corner on a failed policy that's been disastrous for our communities, and things are going to get better.
80 years ago, we repealed alcohol prohibition in this state. We did it prior to the federal government, and we're doing the same thing when it comes to marijuana. We are a step ahead, and we will continue to lead the way.
It means I'm going to smoke a lot of weed tonight!
Woo! Some call it marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Some of them call it kind of God. Never mind. Legalize it.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everybody. Normally, Bago Schwago would be joining us today, but on Halloween, we have a tradition here at the Russ Belville Show, and that is to bring out that great classic song from The Toys. We love The Toys. They did the original Smoke Two Joints, as Brian could very easily tell you. Where are The Toys from, do you know?
I believe they're from here in Oregon, somewhere down Southern Oregon.
Yeah, Southern Oregon band. Yeah,
Eugene or something originally, but...
Yeah, we got to see them at Hemp Fest this year.
Yeah, that was excellent. It was one of the first times they had played since, I think it was 2002, they said. Hmm. I got to see them play at the World Hemp Expo Extravaganza 2 down in Harrisburg, Oregon in 1998. And that was a great experience. It was just, you know, they had the Merry Pranksters with them, and it was an awesome show. But
awesome show. Well, here it is with the classic, The Toys, with... Monster Hash.
I was working in the lab late one night when I heard the gurgle of a water pipe. So I turned to see my monster in a cloud of smoke, who said, "This shit ain't bad. Here, have a toke.
We smoke some hash.
We smoke some monster hash.
Some monster hash.
It was his personal stash.
We smoke some hash.
We got completely trashed.
A monster hash.
We smoked some monster hash. As we partied in the castle with the living dead. Mouths were dry and eyes were red. The ghouls and goblins shrieked and screamed. Won't somebody please pass the Visine?
They smoked some hash.
They smoked some monster hash.
Some monster hash.
From Frankie's personal stash.
We smoked some hash.
And they all were smashed.
A monster hash.
They smoked some monster hash.
Whoa.
The mummy was toking on a ball. Wolfman said, "Don't bogart that, pass it along." The swamp thing was toasted, rolling on the floor, laughing hysterically and pleading for more. The scene was rocking as the werewolves moved to the undead reggae band's dance hall grooves. Meanwhile, in the kitchen, Frankenstein baked some Alice B. Toklas brownies and cakes.
We ate some hash.
We ate some monster hash.
Some monster hash.
It had the graveyard smash.
We ate some hash.
And we all got trashed.
A monster hash.
We ate some monster hash.
Whoa.
The party would have gone on till we all passed out.
Whoa.
But just then we heard a blood-curdling shout.
Whoa.
Watch out! Beware! Cover your necks!
Whoa.
Dracula's got the munchies and he's totally wrecked.
He smoked some hash.
He smoked some monster hash.
Some monster hash.
He was completely smashed.
He smoked some hash.
That Transylvanian's trash.
A monster hash.
He smoked some monster hash.
Whoa.
Now every night the dead rise up from the grave.
Whoa.
To partake in a happening THC rave.
Whoa.
For you, the living, this hash was meant to.
Whoa.
When you get to my door, just say the toys sent you.
We'll smoke some hash.
We'll smoke some monster hash.
Some monster hash.
We'll all get trashed.
We'll smoke some hash.
From my personal stash.
A monster hash.
We'll smoke some monster hash.
Hash.
Easy boy, save some for daddy.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, we've made a call on the controversial marijuana ballot question, Amendment 64. Floyd, we can safely say this is going to pass.
It is legal in the Constitution to possess and grow up to 6 plants.
You cannot be arrested for being in possession of an ounce of marijuana.
Colorado and the state of Washington, they voted to legalize marijuana, not for medical use, but for recreational use.
This is the beginning of taking apart prohibition one state at a time. That's how they did it 80 years ago against alcohol. That's how we're going to do it now against marijuana.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Funky Roller Ring.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy. And I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Ring.
Oh, yeah.
Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funky-licious.
There's always a party at the Funky Roller Ring.
Whoa.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. 30 after the hour, and joining us by telephone once again on the show, we welcome back Larry Talley, retired from the U.S. Navy. Welcome back, Larry.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back, Russ. Uh-huh. I appreciate it. Happy Halloween. That's an awesome costume.
Thank you. Happy Halloween to you. And remind folks what it is you did when you were in the Navy.
Well, I worked for Naval Intelligence. I traveled the world. I did all kinds of different stuff for Navy Intelligence, but it applies to what it is that we're talking about. It just so happens that from the day I enlisted until my career ended, in some point in fashion, my foot was always in the war on drugs. We're talking about someone that was an enlisted person in the United States military, paid for by United States tax dollars to defend their country, but a great part of my job was spent in the war on drugs, just like many other soldiers and sailors that are out there today. That's what I did.
Now, with working in the Navy, I imagine there's a lot of interdiction that is done and a lot of international work. Did your intelligence work lead you that way, too?
Absolutely, yeah. We did a lot of interdiction work. I lived for a lot of part of my, for a good chunk of my career in this, in Panama, the Republic of Panama. And that was a forward operating post for us, the United States Army, very southern, riverine components of the military. And what we did was what was our South American drug interdiction operations. And so this kind of takes place a little bit farther back in time when Scarface was a popular movie. And this, and Scarface depicted this period of time in which there was a lot of lawlessness involved with the narco trafficking from Colombia, Bolivia, Brazil, on up through Panama and on up through into the United States. This is before Mexico really had a foot in their game. Mm-hmm. Had a foot. And General Barry McCaffrey was, who later became the drug czar, he was the commander in charge down there. So he was the guy in charge. So this is the kind of period of time that, trying to paint a picture of what it was like down there back in that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things that I've been reading a lot lately, in fact, I was just reading a piece today where they're trying to defend this war on drugs, and part of what they've said was that, wow, you know, we've really reduced the amount of cocaine that people are using, and Colombia, they've reduced 60% of the coca crops down there, but they kind of gloss over the fact that all that seems to do is move it to Bolivia and Ecuador.
Well, what we did was we interdicted in between the Cali and the Medellin cartels down there in South America. And when that occurred, all the drug trafficking then funneled to different places. Now, what was very interesting about this, the Cali and the Medellin cartels, Medellin, Colombia, they were the cartels that were in charge of what was mostly coming into the United States at that point in time. There was always a concern from the State Department that should we break these cartels apart, that we would lose the ability to observe the drugs coming into the United States, which mm-hmm. is an interesting notion because that seems to intimate that people in the State Department knew that if we did take out these cartels, that there would be a splinter that would occur, and we would lose the ability to at least watch and count the amount of drugs coming to the United States. So when we did take those out, that's exactly what did occur. Yeah. There was a splinter groups that grabbed a hold of all of this drug trade. It created a vacuum, just exactly the same way as it does on the street corner. Look, we all know how that works, right? The guy on the street corner pulls his, you know, the drugs out of his pocket and offers them for sale, and when they get handcuffed and taken away, there's another guy that pops right back in his place. There's no difference. Anytime you take out a cartel, as long as the problem exists, the problem is prohibition. So it's just indicative of human nature. It doesn't matter if it's here, South America, China, or Afghanistan. So that's what occurred, and so these splinter groups had picked it up. And then we have this story, this progression of what occurred ever since then. It did splinter to different parts of the jungle, and it even went as far as Fuerzas Armadas Revolutionary Armed Forces, which was originally a group out of Colombia, they turned into a narco group and they spread throughout the region. Yeah, it was just narco trafficking. Wherever the narco guys were, that's where there was going to be trafficking. And so then that's kind of what brought us up into what has become today. The war just keeps coming farther up north. Now, today, you know, we have cartel leaders that are basing their operations here in the United States, here in Texas, in Chicago. It's going to get worse. The war is going to continue to escalate until we can change our policy. And that's, at least now, I believe that we're beginning to see the dam break.
Yeah, it seems like people are starting to get it as far as the drug war goes, because no poll has surprised me more than the recent poll, public policy polling, came out from your home state of Texas there saying 58% of Texans want to legalize marijuana. What did you think about that, and what do we do next?
Yeah, see, this really is surprising, and I agree with you. You know, you've done some great briefs on Texas. I've seen them. I've been astonished. It's opened my eyes to different parts of Texas. And to explain Texas, first of all, it's not a small state. We all know Texas is a big state. Like Texas or dislike Texas, it's a big place. There's a lot of people. But what's really interesting about it is that the liberal hotspots, and I hate to really use the term liberal, really, I want to say the educated people that understand that some of these big social issues like the war on drugs and some of these other ones that kind of fall in sync right behind that one and right in front of that one, those folks that are real liberal on those particular topics are mostly in Dallas, Fort Worth, El Paso, Houston, Austin, outside of those big metroplex areas. And that's not to say even Lubbock is growing, and even Amarillo has a smaller group of it. Outside of that, it's a very, very conservative state. I mean, our two state senators are some of the most conservative, staunch conservative Tea Party toters in our House. So it's so for Texas to come out at, you know, 58% is really pretty surprising. I hope that kind of paints a picture of how surprised we really are. We knew that Texans were for medical marijuana. You know, a couple of years ago, the University of North Texas threw together a really nice poll, and they came up with some very interesting stats in that about 78% of Texans were for medical marijuana. About 40% were for legalizing. So, I mean, there's a big disparity there. Mm-hmm. You know, but about that 78% of Texans that were for medical marijuana, 80% of that category didn't believe that their neighbor felt the same way. So, mm-hmm. In other words, you know, we had a big chunk, three-quarters of Texans were for medical marijuana, but, you know, more than three-quarters of that group were closeted cannabis, you know, believers. Mm-hmm. I want to say consumers or tokers, because these are people that are just, you know, they believe in medical marijuana. So that means that they're not going to be outspoken. These aren't the people that are going to be in our favor, that are going to go to the polls, that are going to go talk to our representatives. So again, yes, to answer your question in a very long-winded way, I'm very surprised. Thank you.
Well, you know, the other surprising thing in that poll was 58% support for legalization, 61% support for decrim. That's only a 3-point gap. Usually there's a much greater gap between legalization and decrim, and I think that bodes well for moving forward in Texas with some sort of a legalization measure, don't you?
I think so, too. I think Texas is becoming ready. I believe that the legislators are becoming more educated on the matter. You know, with the national trends, and following in these national trends, are some very predominant national figures that are starting to shake their heads and change their minds too. And I believe as that watershed begins to change, as that watershed begins to fall, that these minds are going to change. We've seen that people can pivot pretty quickly on some topics when exposed to the right elements. And we're finally, you know, with the education of cannabis topics at Normal and MPP and all these different groups have been coming together on and educating the country. And I can't discount Sanjay Gupta coming out and recanting some of his, you know, previous statements and saying, you know, hey, I've become educated on this topic. And look, it's helping kids. And we're seeing, a new FDA study for a new product it's a whole plant extract to help treat epilepsy and perhaps some other issues in children, is just beginning to start. I believe in the next couple of months, there's going to be 50 kids that are going to be receiving marijuana extract. Mm-hmm. That's been authorized by the FDA. That's something I think it's pretty monumental. You know, something that's kind of happening from the pharmaceutical edge, from the outside of it, you know. Kind of follows the American mantra, let's legalize it. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's not get in our box canyon, but gosh, these kids, let's do what we can for them today. And I think that's a great approach. And as we see these successes Texas is going to be right on tribe with the rest of the country.
We sure hope so. And with Great Leap speakers like you down there working in Dallas-Fort Worth and work with DFW Normal, one of the best chapters in the country, things are going to happen faster than anybody would ever have imagined. Just even 10 years ago, you couldn't imagine the reforms that we've gotten today. Larry, we got to wrap things up, but if you've got some contact information or websites you'd like to get out to the people, this would be the time to do it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. We'd like to give a shout out to Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. This is a premier organization made up of wonderful people, like-minded people who want to legalize drugs. We'd love to hear from you. Please reach out to me, Larry@LEAP.cc. That's Larry@LEAP.cc. And DFW, which is Dallas Fort Worth Chapter of Normal, National Organization for the Reformation of Marijuana Laws. This is a very great grassroots organization that's building up really quick. Come visit them at dfwnormal.org. That's dfwnorml.org. These guys are flaming. They're really helping to change some minds here in Texas. And if you're from Texas, go to Texas Normal. Come visit us at DFW Normal. We'd love to hear from you because we want you to go educate your representatives. We got a job for you. And I know that you guys want to do a job to help get marijuana legalized. Come visit us. And let's get to work together. Thank you very much, Russ, for all you do. Bless you on this wonderful Halloween. Gosh, that's a scary costume.
Well, thank you so much. I am the pinhead pothead this year, and we appreciate all you're doing with Leap as well. Also, Larry, I've got an assignment to write a piece for Veterans Day about veterans and medical cannabis. Get back in touch with me after the show. We'll talk about that, okay?
Awesome. Will do. Thank you, Russ.
All right. When we come back, we got a report on Vermont from one of our listeners, so stay tuned.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more.
I helped murder families in Colombia.
It was just innocent fun.
I helped kidnap people's dads.
Hey, some harmless fun.
I helped kids learn how to kill.
I was just having some fun, you know. I helped kill policemen.
I was just having fun.
I helped the bomber get a fake passport.
All the kids do it.
I helped kill a judge.
I helped blow up buildings.
My life. My body.
It's not like I was hurting anybody else.
Activism begins with act. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back. Bonus segment for today's show, a little bit of activist agenda. We've got an update that I've been holding on to for a day or two here. Our own Fran Janik in Vermont, Medigrow, Vermont, is on the line to tell us what's new with the whole situation up there in Vermont. Hi, Fran.
Hey, Russ. Hello from the Green Mountain State. And tonight, yes, we do have some really nice information. The last time I spoke to you, I didn't quite know who the fourth dispensary license was going to go to, and there will be four dispensary licenses. I believe that one will be in the northeast quadrant of the state, Northeast Kingdom, possibly in St. Johnsbury. But we have another thing happening there with one of the other licensees that's already operational being given an opportunity and permission to actually have a satellite dispensary. They'll continue to grow in one location, but they will be having a place for patients to come and get their cannabis in Brattleboro, Vermont. And that is one of the dispensaries already in operation. And I will put it out there that my official contact did not give me this information. This came through the ladies in the bank. But it will be Shane Lynn out of Burlington.
All right.
And that's who's going to get it. I understand he's doing a great job. We're really happy about that. He's got a range of products from about 250 an ounce to the lower end of the plant all the way up to 450. And I understand his cannabis is doing well for patients. So that's a good thing.
Well, that's great news.
The other thing that has happened that got by me, I guess, it's not officially on the books, but what the groups that are in charge of this in the organization, the state organization, have done is they're allowing doctors to write for pretty much any condition. I haven't heard of one that's been refused, was basically the quote I got from somebody who was in the know.
Wow.
So rather than the limited conditions that we were given, we may be getting some leeway. They may be evolving this without actually having to go to the legislature, and I think that's wonderful.
Because if I understand, in Vermont, you're one of the more limited states as far as condition lists. You don't have glaucoma on the list.
Exactly, Russ. I mean, I happen to suffer from severe and chronic pain due to a number of injuries, but glaucoma is one thing I do have that wouldn't be covered. But now I understand it shall be. Basically, the doctors have been doing the research. They're finding out what's going on. Of course, I talked to my own physician, being a registered patient. And they're taking this to heart, and they're finding that they're going to get a lot of people off narcotics, a lot of less pill popping.
All right. That's really good news. Better access for patients up there, improvements in the system in Vermont. That's always good news. And we appreciate you giving us the update on that.
Well, thanks again for having me on, Russ. We like to, you know, it's good to keep the community advised, and I hope everybody in Vermont that's out there that wants to be a patient will join the program. I think we really do have only a segment of those that are eligible from the people that I speak to that have conditions that are eligible that are willing to join the program, as it was very limited.
Yeah, let's get involved. All right, thank you so much, Fran. And anyone else out there, if you've got information in your state that you'd like to share with the cannabis community, you can always become one of our correspondents, just like Fran. All you got to do is just get in touch with us through our 420radio.org contact form. Let us know you'd like to be providing us updates, and we'll put you in our rotation. Thanks again, Fran. And when we come back, we'll have time for a little radical rant. Stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Ph.D.
If we're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana and the next thing you know they got 10 years, they've got mandatory sentences, and these judges just say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, it's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club,
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just
makes more sense stance on the marijuana issue than the president, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Well, happy Halloween, everyone. And for today's rant, we're going to talk a little bit about the subject of race in the marijuana reform community. And this was brought to my attention by someone who I hold in incredibly high esteem, Dr. Carl Hart, the neuropsychopharmacologist at the Columbia University, one of the two American researchers who's been approved to work with cannabis, actual cannabis, and give it to people and test them. Anyway, Dr. Hart has a new book out. It's an amazing book, high price, and you should check it out. But today in The Nation magazine, he wrote a piece called Pot Reform's Race Problem. The fight against marijuana prohibition must put racial justice at the center. And this is a topic that'd be very interesting to discuss because there's really not a right or a wrong answer here. It's just interesting to see how people perceive the issue. Dr. Hart, if you do not know, is black and one of the very few black men in academia and drug law reform in those issues. So he's got a very interesting and very learned perspective on the issue. Now, what he points out, he says there's more than 700,000 marijuana arrests, which account for more than half of all drug arrests. And because of the selective targeting of African-American males, one in three black boys born today will spend time in prison. One out of three. One out of three black boys that you see is going to go to prison sometime in his life. And he points this out as a public health issue. This is something that needs to be looked at from that perspective. And he goes on further to say the scientific community has ignored this shameful marijuana-related effect. There are virtually no articles in the scientific community, scientific literature addressing it. One possible reason is that the National Institutes of Health has not made it a priority to understand or prevent racial discrimination, even though racism and its impact on health is very well documented. But he gets to the meat of the issue, I think, when he points out that another reason for this blind spot is the researchers themselves are overwhelmingly non-black. And this is not unique to scientists. The major law reform organizations, such as Marijuana Policy Project and NORML, Dr. Hart writes, have also largely ignored this obvious injustice. About a month ago, I appeared on a Pacifica radio station in Washington, D.C. with a director from one such group who said, quote, "We know there are stop and frisk policies and so forth that are terribly racially discriminatory, but we're looking at the big picture of public health," end quote. In his view, the racist enforcement of marijuana laws was not a big picture item. The more pressing issue, he explained, is correcting the erroneous belief that marijuana is a gateway drug to harder substances. Dr. Hart writes, "I had to exercise a great deal of restraint as I listened incredulously to this person dismiss the grave injustice being perpetrated against black people." And then he goes to point out that for the most part, MPP and NORML, their boards are largely white, although full credit is due to NORML for bringing on more people of color, more women onto the board. Same for MPP. He also points out, Dr. Hart points out, that he's on the board of Drug Policy Alliance, which tends to have a more broader audience and more broader board. So this was interesting to me to get Dr. Hart's perspective on this issue and his point that marijuana reform needs to be a civil rights issue, needs to be a civil justice issue. But in the comments section, Mason Tavert actually responded, Mason Tavert from MPP. Now, I don't know if he was the person on the Pacific station with Dr. Hart particularly, but Mason says, "I'm disappointed by Dr. Hart's assertion that organizations like MPP and NORML are somehow dismissive of the racial injustice. Just because the orgs don't adhere strictly to that one aspect does not mean it's dismissive. After all, there are many good reasons to repeal marijuana prohibition." And here's a big one from Mason. "And quite frankly, many of those other reasons have been proven to be more effective when it comes to actually changing laws and repealing marijuana prohibition. So Dr. Hart's assertion is that we need to be a civil rights issue, we need to bring the racial injustice to the center of marijuana reform. Mason seems to be saying it's part of the issue, but there's other parts of the issue that poll better. Maybe the marijuana is safer part, maybe the tax revenue part, maybe the carding kids part. I don't know particularly. But that's what he says. Quite frankly, many of those other reasons have been proven to be more effective. Now, there was another commenter who kind of rephrased that in a way to make you think a little. On the other hand, if you tell white people that getting busted for pot is particularly a black person's problem, white people may lose interest in actually doing anything about it. So that's the double-edged sword of the race issue in marijuana reform. And it's something I dealt with from 2009 to 2012 when I was Normal's outreach director. I was always searching for ways to bring more Latinos and African Americans into marijuana reform. And it vexed me because I'm not the guy that's going to get busted. For the most part, statistically speaking, I'm a middle-aged white dude. The chances of me seeing the inside of a cell for the fact that I use marijuana are very, very low. And it always bothered me, why is it that the communities that are so largely impacted by marijuana prohibition aren't the ones who are populating the marijuana reform movement? I hypothesize that, gee, maybe when you've already got a target on your back, you don't want to really stand up and be the let's legalize pot guy. Maybe there's something to do that. Maybe there's something in what Madeline Martinez taught me when I started with Oregon Normal in 2005. She being one of the few women and maybe one of the only Latinos running a drug law reform chapter, said color attracts color. And sure enough, when she was leading Oregon Normal, our membership seemed to be pretty diverse. And I gotta qualify that by the fact that we're in Portland, Oregon, the whitest city in America, the whitest large city in America. But even for Portland, we seem to have a pretty diverse, broad range of membership and supporters. I would love to find more people involved. And when I was at this International Reform Conference, I realized that maybe my hypothesis is wrong. Maybe just the language was wrong. Maybe the message was wrong. Maybe Dr. Hart's right in that framing this as a civil rights issue is the way to bring in more minority support. Because when I was there at the DPA conference, I saw lots and lots of people from all sorts of backgrounds from all over the world who were involved in this issue. And so I know it can be done. I know that we can bring more people into the movement. It's just a matter of how we shape that message. And as this other commenter kind of flippantly put it, by doing so, do we actually hurt the movement? If the real goal is to help end the marijuana prohibition because it is so racially pernicious that it is so disproportionate to people of color, does it do black folks any good if we hype how bad it is for black folks and then that turns off white folks from wanting to help? That's an interesting question. I do look back to the civil rights movement for some guidance on this and saw that if it wasn't for the help of a lot of white folks that were standing and marching with Dr. King and all these civil rights revolutionaries, that it never could have happened. So we'll take this into hour two in Toker Talk Radio. We'll talk more about race and the marijuana reform issue. Is Dr. Hart right? Is it an issue that needs to be at the forefront of reform? Is Mason Tvert right, where it might not be the best polling issue? We'll talk about it with our audience here. You can call in live at 971-533-7111. We're here every weekday from 3 to 5 Pacific time right here on 420radio.org. If you missed any of the beginning, replays at 6 and 9 a.m. and p.m. For Dr. Brian the Red, I'm the pothead pinhead, or the pinhead pothead. I'm not sure which. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.